Okay. It's America, so it's fair. Okay, so before we get to the important stuff, why doesn't everybody just introduce yourself? You can scream it from all the way back there.
My name's Aaron, and I'm sat with Jeff, and I'm from Delays.
Hello, I'm Rolly. I play drums in Delays.
Hello, I'm Colin. I play bass in Delays.
And I'm Greg, and I sing and play guitar in Delays.
Why does the drummer always wear sunglasses? The drummer always wears sunglasses.
He's blinded by the rhythm.
Blinded with rhythm. Before we get into the important stuff, I see that I can play beach football on your site. Now, are we talking soccer on the beach? Let's get to the important stuff.
Yeah, soccer on the beach. Soccer on the beach. I don't know, it's an angle that people have taken in England because we always, really into football and but I don't know where the beaches come from because there's no beaches in Southampton. It's a coastal town, but people assume that there's beaches there.
You stole my number six question, but that's okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. let's pretend we didn't go there.
No, that's fine. Okay, let me get to the basic stuff, because we already started this discussion before the interview, so I'll just do the list. The Delays, the Veils, the Thrills, Keen. So this is melodic rock that sounds like it's from another time. Now, you can object to anybody in that list, because you get lumped in there. But it's not what's being played on alternative radio since the late 80s or early 90s. It's just not. And suddenly, here we all are.
I think it's cyclical. Everything's cyclical, you know. I mean, it's inevitable. And once this is at its day, then it's all going to go back around the boy bands and girl bands again. I mean, there has to be a knee-jerk reaction. There has to be. I mean, I don't necessarily lump us in with those bands at all, because I think we've got...
No, but you see, and it's interesting to sell, as you know, because we started this discussion before this interview, to sell records. Somebody has to lump you. You have to be packaged in some way, shape, or form, right? I received another one from Sanctuary today that I won't even, they started with a B, and it was like the Budwells or the Bus. It wasn't the Bees. It was another one, and I popped it in, and I didn't like the guy's voice. It was as simple as that, and it was a. I don't want to say a cheap imitation of you, but it was a cheap imitation of you, and they're from there.
That's the first one. Wow, that's so cool. Don't know, this is the ultimate form of flattery, isn't it?
But anyway, why do you think suddenly this package is happening with the melodic rock thing, and it's cool and it's a good time to be doing it, obviously, but...
My feeling is this: all of us were like at school and teenagers or whenever, when the Britpop thing happened in Britain, too young to fully take part in it, and yet, being influenced by it. Through that, then you go backwards and you discover the Stone Roses and Teenage Fan Club and then Big Star and then the Birds, and you just keep going back. But I think a lot of the bands who were influenced by that era are just beginning to come through now. You know, it's nearly a decade on.
And I mean, Teenage Fan Club, heck, they did a hell of a cover of Like a Virgin. So
we've heard that. That's fantastic. See, they know their songwriting. They know their songwriting, and they're not too proud to show it.
No, and the great part is that they just did a best of, two CD tribute set, and that's always a great thing when a band that over here really didn't do anything.
Well, they're underground in Britain, do you know what I mean? They're not like a big band in Britain. They got a lot of respect and stuff, but the best bands aren't necessarily the ones who tend to go massive, really.
Well, that's not even on my question list, but I'm going to go there. The interesting thing, and I it sounds a terrible thing, we interviewed The Thrills a while ago, and then I called up Virgin Records, and I said, just out of curiosity, because you've sent me all the singles and everything, how many units have they sold? How many records have they sold? And they said, and this was okay, admittedly, a couple of months ago, they said 85,000 records. And I said, well, gosh golly, in America, 85,000 records is not what... the bands that we're talking about, the Holly sold a lot more of Stop, Stop, Stop than 85,000 records. So just out of curiosity, I know that over there you've certainly made it, pretty major. Is your goal to really get out there? I always ask bands this because a lot of bands are like, oh, well, we sold 50,000 and we made the music and that's kind of cool.
No, I mean, if I don't see any glamour and being obscure and underground, that's not what we're doing it for at all, but on the other hand, if all we were thinking about was making money and stuff, then we wouldn't be in a band.
That's probably true.
I think to be massively successful on our own terms is what we want to achieve, but we won't channel what we're doing into a certain genre or anything, and plus there's not a precedent for what we're doing and being successful. We've been described as a tech-friendly Birds, which I think is a nice description, and I haven't seen a lot of that on the charts in the last 4 or 5 years. So if we were that calculated, we certainly wouldn't be making the music that we're doing.
I haven't seen a lot of that on the charts in the past two decades. Okay, but on the website, you know, and you have to go by the bio on some things. Influencers like, I'm going to do it in an announcer voice. ABBA, T-Rex, and The Laws. Did that make you, I want everybody to answer this one. Did that make you unpopular growing up?
I wasn't into ABBA or T-Rex when I was growing up. I've got to be honest, though.
Okay, so let's do that one. Let's pass the microphone around. What was everybody into when they were growing up?
I was indie. I was into Ride, Slow Dive, My Bloody Valentine, Stone Roses. Well, I still am as well.
It's got a live Ride, live at the BBC, the BBC sessions that they just put out.
That's a new one.
Just came out. Pretty amazing.
I haven't seen that yet.
And we got it here in America. What do you think of that?
I'm impressed. I'm impressed. You've got it. do you want to know? See, I wasn't into that at all. I was into like electro and techno, like Kevin Saunderson and Carl Craig and people like that, and Aphex Twin. That's who I was loving when I was growing up. So chuck that in the mix.
So much for the bio.
The first music that I actually listened to was Motown and things like that. And then later on, I got into things like R.E.M.
And in England, it's Tamla Motown.
Yeah.
They gave Stevie Wonder and Marvin Gaye the ride before the Supremes. Okay, but now.
Okay. When I was really little, I was into like the electro compilations because I used to like break dancing with my older friends. But then the first person I was really passionate about was Prince, especially when he was with Wendy and Lisa and ABBA. But that music's so orchestrated and so electronic that it's quite scary. But then sort of got into a band called Shack, and that kind of turned me onto acoustic guitars and stuff.
But I mean, I would say if any of that list, The Laws, who of course didn't really, you know, everybody knows them for what, two songs?
Yeah.
They were a two-song band and a one-album band, right? And you know, There She Goes is like you say, The Laws. Oh yeah, There She Goes, and that's pretty much what you get.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, so you've been signed to Rough Trade what? Early 2003. I mean, this is pretty new, isn't it?
No, it wasn't 2003. It was 2001.
It was that long.
Yeah.
So, go ahead.
So we were called Idoru, after a William Gibson novel, and
right.
We put out one EP when we did, because we sent our demos to Jeff Trappett. He's taking a photo over there.
That's okay. I should have him take some photos of us, but we'll get someone else to that later.
We sent our demos to Jeff Travis at Rough Trade and he could have signed it. He's got like a few labels. He's got Rough Trade, he's got Blancanegro, he's got all these ones.
Right.
And initially we went on to Blancanegro and we put out one EP on it, but we were kind of a three-piece then. But they kind of ended up taking all the bands off of Blancanegro and putting them onto Rough Trade. But we didn't want to go. We wanted to sign to Rough Trade, and we told them when we signed initially. You know.
But in this form, the delays have been the delays for not very long. I mean, this has been a whirlwind, has it not?
Yeah, it's pretty well, but you always want it quicker and you want it faster. I still get frustrated when people don't know us, you know.
We might be taking a ride on the bus, by the way. We'd like a burger with fries. Just kidding. If you could get us. What would you guys like to order? I don't edit these interviews too much, so we're going to take a little ride on the bus. I think we're going to go about 6 feet. So if anything exciting happens at that moment. Okay. So, I see you initially toured with, you know, the Coral and the aforementioned Thrills, but then the one that hit me, because I'm like a I like mystery,
yeah.
And I've actually played them here, is McCallum and Butler, and I know so little about them except that I heard them. I actually went to one of those websites, and they said if you like the, and I forgot what band I was buying, you'll also like McCallum and Butler. So I went to Amazon UK and I got them, and I've played them on the show. And people keep calling them saying, "Who are those guys?"
Well, Bernard used to be in Suede. Bernard Butler
right.
used to be the guitarist of Suede, and McCallum used to be in a band called Thieves like years ago, and he had a solo album.
He really is taking for us for a ride, by the way.
Yeah, he really is. And it's just big epic sort of epic music, isn't it? Orchestrated. That's like Tamla Motown to me.
Yeah,
you know?
It's amazing stuff. That's the theme from McCallum and Butler on that album.
That's
it's just
awesome.
it's like whoa.
But we when we first signed a deal, we wanted to work with Mike Hedges because of McCallum and Butler. We did do a little bit of work with Mike simply because of Yes, the song Yes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's beautiful. It's classic.
Yeah, I mean it's amazing how I think what's amazing, you know, sitting here is how many bands from there really don't make it over here. And probably because people like me aren't playing them, so it isn't getting to where it needs to get to. So, just to get serious for a second, in your bio...
Oh, don't, yeah.
Okay, we'll do it for a second. No, but I mean, the lots of happy songs on the album, but if you really, and it's really an interesting thing to me that what I find with a lot of music these days is that, I don't want to say it's sugar-coated, but there's a lot of very serious themes in some very incredibly pretty melodies. And, you know, in your bio you say, there's been a lot of, you know, death and illness and a lot of things that have gone on in life over the past year. So, you know, was, and that's a long time coming, was all the bad things just a matter of time? Did it just happen that that happened in the past year? And did the song, was the songwriting affected, or did it just kind of fall into the songwriting?
Not consciously, I think it influenced it just through our attitude, you know. Your attitude to life changes when a lot of people are die, you know. Positively, you know, we haven't sat about and shut ourselves away too much, but a song like Long Time Coming is really influenced directly by that, and the new stuff we're writing certainly is. I don't know, the music that I find most exciting doesn't necessarily celebrate how happy everything is all the time, you know, and it does wind you up sometimes when people can't see beyond the tune, you know.
How do you feel as a drummer not playing happy tunes?
Not playing happy tunes?
Yes.
Well, they all make me happy anyway, so I don't really care. No, I mean, you know. Well, no, because they're not happy tunes as in la la la, everything's great, but I find them all very uplifting.
No, but isn't part of the fun, I want someone else to answer this, isn't part of the fun, I mean, the Beach Boys did, you know, did that a lot. I mean, sure, they did fun, but they also did some pretty serious, you know, pretty serious songs. And the way that they, quote, got away with that, the reason the audience was willing to listen to it, because it wasn't a dirge.
Yeah, I mean, we were talking about the Lars earlier, that's a case in point, you know, that There She Goes is about smack, supposedly, but I'm sure it is. So there's, do you know what I mean? I mean, you don't have to, you can have a happy melody and write about real touching personal things, and I think that makes it more credible, you know?
Yeah, I know there are a lot of people that just try to be sad. I mean, you know, we won't mention Morrissey. We just won't go there.
I think sometimes it's easier to be sad. It's easier to write like that. I think it's sometimes you get more out of it if it's not necessarily done in such an obvious way. If it's done in a way which maybe on the surface seems like there's like happiness there, but underneath there's like an undertow, like a current underneath. And I think sometimes ultimately you get more out of it from a sort of like a in a sort of like an emotional sort of way.
Well, it makes it approachable.
I think there's an assumption as well, especially in a music community, that if you write music that's sort of melancholic or depressing, and you're immediately seen as being deeper and more intellectual, you know, and upbeat music, you're seen as being shallow. You know, I think those are the immediate.
So Britney Spears needs to write, you know, needs to do something really.
I think Britney Spears is pretty fucked up anyway, to be honest with you. No, you know what I mean? I think other people are writing her songs, and also our music's like cathartic, in not in a lyrical sense, but maybe in a sense as we're trying to create the environment we want to be in.
Faded Seaside Glamour conjures up this, I bet for anybody, mine was New Jersey, you know, but it conjures up, or Asbury Park, or it conjures up the place where the Ferris wheel's a little squeaky and the machines just, you know, you put the quarters in and it eats them instead of letting you play pinball. You know, it does all of that, which really totally appeals to me. But your Faded Seaside Glamour is very different than the seaside glamour of, you know, of a lot of people that have done that before, all of the Beach Boys or Bruce Springsteen or anything like that. So talk about, who wants to, I'd like you all to kind of, tell me what your faded seaside glamour is and like what's cool about it. Because I love things that have a little more of an underbelly, and I think yours is kind of there.
So pass it around, tell me a little bit about it.
Mine has to be, well, was it the place where you come up with it? Was it Margate? That's Margate in England, which is to the east of London, further down the coast, is the ultimate in faded seaside glamour. It's, I don't know, I was playing that machine where you put 2p in and to see if the machine will push out more pennies for hours, and didn't seem to be working. So that's my sad tale of a faded seaside glamour.
Faded seaside glamour, for me, is where we live in Southampton, not the area. But if you go down by the docks, there's a pier there, or there was a pier, and it's the same as Brighton as well. There's all these old decrepit buildings that once were thriving, busting with all these people opening doors, you know. But yeah, that's it for me.
I mean,
yeah, can I be excused?
Sure.
Rolly's leaving.
Go ahead. Good night, San Francisco.
I mean, to me, I think, and I think it's raised sort of more, slightly more directly in particular on Long Time Coming. I think it's kind of the sense in that when you're away on tour, when you're doing what we're doing, which is quite an unusual sort of thing, and it doesn't really have any sort of timeline. Do you know what I mean? I don't feel any different to when I was 18. But when you go out and you do these things and you come home and you see your friends again, and every time you ask what they're doing, and you know they're into this routine where they know pretty much what they're going to be doing for the next 25 years, and it's that sort of like thing that they used to have is kind of gone. They've lost that sort of like there was all these possibilities, right, and they've chosen this possibility, and now that's their life for like 20 years, 25 years, and that's it. It's a little bit melancholic.
Mine's the fact that whenever I get home from being on tour, I realise that I never appreciated one second of being in these places, and then
it hits you.
It hits me, yeah. And do you know what I mean? I'm in San Francisco today, and I'm not appreciating it. I will do tomorrow, but you know, I want to be now.
My faded seaside glamour is I saw some old cine film Super 8 footage of my nan and granddad on holiday in Blackpool in the 50s, and they're all young and pretty and cool, and all the lights were there. And then you go back to those sorts of places, and the same places are all crumbling and decaying, and you got the ghosts of these people lurking about. But it's you know, like ballrooms with just distant, echoey, ghostly music. You know, it's that kind of melancholic thing. I didn't want a title that played up the sunshine of the album, because you know people do reference sort of the Beach Boys and these things. The melancholic thing was really important, you know, to the whole sound of the record.
So you, somewhere in your bio or somewhere on the site, it says that your goal is to be the perfect pop band. What would make you the perfect pop band? It's a great goal in my mind, and I know I can name my perfect pop bands, but I'm just kind of curious what would make you. You know, what would make the Delays the perfect pop band?
Perfect pop band could be parodied when they've retired on The Simpsons, and you'd recognize them without having to be told it's them. That's it.
You can draw them as cartoons, and you know, yeah, there he is, there he is, there he is, and there he is.
Yeah, I know. When the Beatles were made a cartoon. It was perfect, and it was absolutely. You know, I played Photograph by Ringo Starr the other night.
That's a great record.
And I played that on my show, and then I played just this little clip from Hard Day's Night, and it was Ringo. And people called up and said, "What made you?" And I just said, "Because it was so easy. It was so absolutely simple." So, you know, the other thing, you recorded at Rockfield Studios. Now, isn't that where, I've had the pleasure of interviewing these people, Dave Edmunds, Nick Lowe, isn't that where they did all of that incredible, great, killer, top 40-ish, you know, perfect distorted bass production?
Doesn't Dave Edmunds live about 200 yards down the road still?
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of his place, isn't it?
We were talking to the guy who owns it, Kingsley, and he's like best mates with Dave. And he said he went down to his house and he opened up his wardrobe, and didn't he have... No, oh, that was, sorry, Dave Edmunds went to George Harrison's house. Sorry, I'm tired. Went to George Harrison's house, and he took him upstairs and he opened up his wardrobe, and he had the Sgt. Pepper outfit still in.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, doesn't it, when you were, I mean, in that same faded seaside glamour, you get a, the second you enter a studio like that, I don't know whether you see the ghosts or you see the live human beings, but you just know that something kind of amazing is going to happen.
There's a nostalgia. I guess it's a nostalgia that runs through a lot of our stuff, because I think we consider ourselves part of a lineage, if that's the right word, you know, of like the Stone Roses and the Lars that stretches right back. You know, we're very aware of our history, and I think it was at the back of all of our minds going to Rockfield, you know, the history there, particularly for the Stone Roses for us. Mm-hmm. That's our generational touchstone, you know.
Yeah, and I'll bet it's not as high tech as a lot of the other studios either, just on principle.
It's very much held together with pins. It's
you never know it. It doesn't matter. Great reverb is great reverb. Oh, it doesn't.
They got their own echo chambers there that used to be the horse stables.
Mm-hmm.
They're beautiful. They're really great.
Hours in there. Hours.
We just go and stand in the chambers
and hang out.
Yeah, but when
sing in the chambers, yeah. So immediately you get that reverb right from when you actually sing with the microphones inside the chamber.
So you don't have to do it on the board. It doesn't matter.
If ever we were thinking we wanted another part for the song, we'd go and stand for hours in the reverb chamber and just float ideas around in there, and then stuff just bounces off the walls and you get it.
Because it all sounds so good in there, you know, once you start just sort of like humming or what, it all just fills up the room.
Kind of different, isn't it? It's the way to do it. So, by the way, just to make sure you know this, and I'm doing this so I tell you, not even because I care about this for the interview, but you're at the Troubadour tomorrow night.
Yeah.
Now, are you aware of the story of the Troubadour? Has anybody told you the story of the Troubadour?
I know.
That where David Crosby and the other members of the Byrds composed a lot of their famous stuff was in some of the rooms of the Troubadour. Composed and decomposed lots of things. You know that?
I mean, that's sort of intimidating and inspiring at the same time.
Oh, I think it's terrific that you get to do it.
Of course, I mean, that's something you can hold forever, but at the same time, you want to do justice to being there, you know, and all those people who've been there, you have to.
But again, you know, this whole interview is turning into all these great things about ghosts and spiritual things and all of that, and that's kind of joyful because it's a different type of rock and roll.
I mean, but for me, for all of us, I think music's the most important thing in the world. It's so much more important than the 3 minutes on the radio. It moves you. It's the only thing that actually moves the real you. The real thing that's inside, you know. And if it sounds pretentious, then I'm sorry, but music's the most important thing in the world to me. You know?
There's nothing pretentious about it. Not when you're talking to me.
You can feel like bleep and put a song on. Do you know what I mean? Everyone's got a song for an occasion, and you can just, whenever you're just feeling a bit wrong, you can put the right song on, and it writes itself. Do you know what I mean? You can just lay there and get lost in. That's the best thing ever, to get the shiver down the spine and feel alive. It's amazing.
So just three more questions. Tell me about, you know, it's kind of interesting. When you've toured the U.S. so far, what percentage of the people do you think are coming for curiosity? What percentage have actually come, you know they've heard the music? So let's do that first. And then the second part that I want you to tell me is, what's the strangest, most weird kind of thing that's happened?
51% of the people
51%
there are there to,
according to a survey,
are there to see us because they've heard us and love us, which is great. And 49% want to fold their arms because they're curious in front of us. Yeah.
I think the important thing is that I would say at least 90%, if not more, go away wanting to see us again.
Wow, these are great statistics.
100% are either love us or think we're shit.
Well, you either are coming thinking, oh, it's a Brit band, I'm going to be seeing, you know, Oasis, or you think something else, or you don't think. But I have no doubt that when I see you, I know what I'm going to get.
Well, I mean, I feel pretty confident about us as a live band. I think we're better live than we are on record.
You probably rock considerably more.
We do rock a lot more than we do on the record, but that wasn't by accident. You know, the record was a conscious attempt to make a headphone record simply because we hadn't found our feet as a live band, and it would have been a mistake to try and capture a live sound that didn't exist at that point.
There are so many bands that just fail these days live due to the not having the natural, you know, reverb chamber.
The reverb chamber is the gift that keeps on giving.
There's deeply spiritual about a reverb chamber. I'm serious. If the world had a reverb chamber, there would be peace.
So you don't need Michael Jackson's, you know, sensory deprivation tank. Yeah. You need a reverb chamber.
Why would you want to deprive senses?
Yeah, right. Enhance
them. Okay. So two more things. The strangest story. What's the strangest thing somebody's done so far on the? It could be here or over, you know, overseas, you know, or Japan, you know, somebody trying to, you know, throw sushi at you on stage, you know, whatever it may be.
In Germany, we played in Berlin, and this big 6'3" Uber fan took his shirt off, massive guy, and he jumped on stage with us. And normally people jump straight off, but he stayed there for like 5 songs.
He didn't try to sing, did he?
Yeah, he did.
He did?
Yeah.
Oh no. And I would imagine that his voice was not very very good. Oh no. Well, yeah, there is Zen heaven.
Exactly.
I could just hear it now, right? Hey, it's a girl. Yeah.
We did an in-store show in Southampton, and it's got like glass doors at the front. And whilst we were sound checking, like about 3 or 4 of these homeless guys who came up to the front and were like dancing, to the soundcheck.
Oh, no.
That was quite cool. I quite like that. Oh, and the other night, I do a song on my own in the set, and in the middle of it, some guy in, I think it was Boston, shouted out, "You rock!
You rock!"
And that's quite blatantly not true when you're doing it like a solo acoustic tune. And I
he was a little behind. There was some medicine that made him behind by one song.
A girl found out which hotel we were in, and she phoned up our hotel room. I don't know how the hell she got our number.
It's quite
spooky. It was just quite spooky.
Yeah, strange things happen. So, okay, this is the one that always stumps people, but I do it every time. And what I do is I do air the full interview on the show. I don't cut it. I just do the whole thing. So this is like the bad metaphor, so get ready. I'm making a delays sandwich, and you are the bread. What two songs of yours am I playing, and give me some songs that go in the middle, and I will send you a copy. I do it every time, whatever you tell me to play. And I have quite, as you can imagine, I can find everything I need. So who wants to start? So two songs. Of course, I'm going to have to sum up your two songs and make you agree in some way, shape, or form, but you can fight over that.
Do you know what? I think Ride It On, we did a cover of a Mazzy Star song called Ride It On.
Now, how do I get that?
You said you could get it.
Okay, well, I'll call Sanctuary and, yeah.
It's on the Rough Trade 25th anniversary album.
Ah, okay.
Yeah? I think that should be a definite filling.
I'd like I'd like your songs to be the bread, and then the filling can be...
That's a piece of bread, then.
You're the bread.
We're the bread. That's one slice.
Slice number one. You can make an open-faced sandwich. It doesn't matter.
Please.
So this is bread, is it?
This is bread.
Well, you do the bread, and then you got to give me some good fillings.
Another one of ours. It's a B-side called Swallowing the Silence, which it Cecil's, but it's possibly my favourite track we've ever done. And I think it's one of the best representations of our sound and where our sound is going.
Where it's going is important too. That's good. I'm going to get there last.
Okay. Okay, I would have chose Wanderlust and maybe Quiet, which is a B-side, is our bread. And then for filling, I would have had Flock of Seagulls, Wishing.
As one. Very cool, very cool.
We played that on our intro tape.
Very cool.
I don't know, go around, I'm still thinking of the filling.
Filling.
There's a Thomas Bangalter tune called I've Got So Much Love to Give, which is the ultimate filling you can have in a sandwich.
Cool.
Yeah, it's so much flavour.
Flavour.
Slide Away from, not from Oasis, from The Verve, from Storm in Heaven.
Sure. And I'd have to have Undecided by Shaq.
There you go. Cool filling.
There's one more filling you need. There's a track called Seen Him by Jim Brown. It's a reggae track.
Yeah. I'll dig it up. I think I know where that is. Any other fillings? This is going to be a good set.
Cherry Cherry by Neil Diamond.
Easy. Neil Diamond? Neil Diamond's a regular on my show, scarily enough. Scarily enough.
We need a newer fill-in.
Okay.
Okay, and I think that I would just... Because this stuff is great, but it could be getting mouldy. I think I'd like to put in I'm Still Your Fag by Broken Social Scene.
Broken Social Scene, we had them on a while back. They're great. Yeah, I saw them at South by Southwest. Incredible. Okay. First of all, thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. Now, here's where the fun comes. You ready?
Okay.
We do IDs for the show.
Okay.
But these are not typical IDs. These are really dumb IDs. So, gather around, and you'll have to do a hello, this is, and then you can finish it up. And you can either rehearse it or not rehearse it. It is your choice. But be aware that I don't edit it, so whatever you do is what goes on for infamy. So, you know, your first time in the U.S., this is what you're going to be stuck with here in San Francisco.
Oh, somebody else is going to have to do this because it mentions me. I can't refer to myself as Greg.
Well, you can do the opening. You can say hello, as you can do the opening part up to you, and then someone can finish.
Aaron, you do it.
And it could be like the Monkees, you know, really bad. So, first you have to do the hello, this is. So, where do you want to start? You want to do that?
You can do it.
Okay.
Where am I reading to? The whole thing?
Well, I think you're reading up to...
After Greg.
Yeah.
Okay, to there.
So you're going
to
do hello, this
is,
pass it around, he'll do it up to Greg, and then we'll hand it to you.
Okay.
So I'm doing to where?
So you're going to do hello, this is, and we're going to pass it around, then it's going to go to him. This is what takes years, by the way.
So
and then it's going to come back to you.
So yep. What am I doing?
You want to grab some?
What are we doing?
Yeah.
So you say, hello, this is Aaron from the Lays, and then you read the next bit.
What, the whole bit?
Oh, no, Aaron. You
this is right out of A Hard Day's Night, isn't it? This is totally.
Read up to that full stop.
This is the longest part of that. I wouldn't know how long this part of the interview is taking.
Keep going.
Yes.
And then I'll pass it to Greg.
Okay, ready?
Hello, this is Colin from The Delays. We were so very pleased that Dennis the Menace took to our record right away. That is, until he offered to join the band.
Uh-huh. When we told him we'd have to kick him in the bollocks to kick like Greg, he decided that without much bother that it might not have been the best idea.
And what do you have to say about that, by the way?
Do you think that was the most polite way to get him to still play our music on the radio without hurting him too much?
Okay, we're going to do one more now that you've rehearsed it.
Okay.
Ready?
Okay, hang on. Right. So I'm going up to join the band. And then you said, when we told him we'd have to kick him in the bus to get him to sing like Greg, he decided without too much bother that it might not be the best.
This has turned into a summit meeting. It's great.
Yeah, we just want it right.
Yes.
Just want to get it right.
Of course.
You ready?
Okay.
In three, two, one. Hello, this is Colin from The Delays. We were so very pleased that Dennis the Menace took to our record right away. That is, until we offered to join the band.
Then, when we told him we'd have to kick him in the bollocks to get him to sing like Greg, he decided that without much bother... I've done it wrong.
Do you think that was the most polite way to get him to still play our music on the radio without hurting him too much?
Lovely. We'll turn that into...